Statewide satellite distribution of this program is made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.
This program is a production of WAMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Chartock of the State University.
Hello and welcome to the Legislative Gazette. This week, criminal charges against dozens of government officials across New York State as a result of a 2.5-year sting operation by the FBI. We'll hear about a major hospital reimbursement plan that was vetoed by the governor and which has the legislature rambling about an override. Candy and soda may not be sold in the schools until after lunch hours, the result of a bill signed by Governor Cuomo. And the issue of surrogate parenting. Senator John Dunn talks about where the bills developed this year will be going next year. That's all coming up on the Legislative Gazette. Officials from the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the U.S. Attorney's Office this week unsealed federal criminal charges against 58 people, including 44 current and former officials across New York State. Most of those indicted are highway superintendents for localities charged with accepting bribes by a federal agent posing as a steel supplier. The Legislative Gazette's Leslie Brokaw reports.
The corruption charges were made by U.S. Attorney Rudolph Giuliani, who says the 44 officials all accepted bribes in an FBI sting operation. An undercover agent posed as a steel product salesman and contacted officials involved in purchasing materials and equipment. Giuliani says that out of 106 bribes offered, only one was refused. That was when the official wanted more bribe money. Federal officials said at a series of press conferences that towns and villages from one end of New York to another were defrauded of more than $750,000. While Giuliani was not at the Albany press conference, his assistant Michelle Hirschman was. She said there were two types of schemes involved, kickbacks and so-called no-ship transactions.
No-ship transactions involved arrangements with suppliers and officials whereby the officials would place an order with the supplier. Delivery receipts would be signed by the official. Invoices would be exchanged and payment would be made by the municipality to the supplier. The goods, however, according to the complaints, were never delivered. And the scheme operated such that the proceeds of the payment by the municipality to the supplier was then split between the vendors and the municipal officials. The second scheme involves basically straight kickback payment arrangements whereby public officials received a percentage on every order that they placed with the supplier.
Also indicted with the 44 officials are 14 businessmen and suppliers and a New Jersey corporation. Thomas Scheer, an assistant FBI director, said that 2.5 years ago, the FBI took a federal agent and gave him a new identity. He became Vincent Cylon, an independent manufacturer representative who sold fabricated steel products to municipalities. He created a legitimate business, but also accepted and paid out bribes. Scheer says that the officials targeted were not randomly chosen, that FBI didn't simply hit pay dirt by lucky guesses, but that the FBI was pursuing people who it already thought were corrupt.
Approximately 2.5 years ago, a local law enforcement official notified the New York office of the FBI of what he considered to be corrupt practices engaged in by local officials as they pertain to kickbacks for steel, purchases of steel fabricated items such as snowplow blades, fencing, and signposts. That information was pursued by the New York office of the FBI in the Southern District of New York for about a year. At the conclusion of that preliminary stage of the investigation, we thought that we had developed enough information to warrant or justify the establishment of an undercover operation to pursue and round out the allegations themselves.
Some defense attorneys are expected to argue that the federal operation was in fact entrapment, which is illegal. If a person is pressured to take a bribe, that can be entrapment. But if a person is considered predisposed to corrupt activity, entrapment is often ruled out. Albany Law School professor George Carpinello says that this predisposition can be showed in a variety of ways.
It's a very nebulous concept, and I think what you're asking the jury to do is to conclude whether these agents really coerced this person or induced an otherwise innocent person to commit a crime, or if the person was out there ready, willing, and able to commit the crime, and it was a question of whether it was going to be the government agent who paid the bribe or the next vendor coming down the pike. And I think you have to look at all the facts and circumstances of the case to decide which is true.
Carpinello notes that records compiled by federal officials before the operation began that those targeted did have a record of corrupt activity would preclude an entrapment defense. Federal authorities said that similar investigations are continuing, and they said that clear inventory procedures by localities should be implemented across the state if future corruption is to be avoided. I'm Leslie Brokaw in Albany.
This was the week that Governor Cuomo made public his decisions on which of the final bills of the session would be signed and which would be vetoed. Among those rejected was a major bill to change the way hospitals are reimbursed in the state by insurance companies. As Leslie Brokaw reports, Cuomo and the legislature had some areas of agreement and some areas of disagreement over this heavily lobbied measure.
Right now, insurance companies and the government help pay the costs of a person's hospitalization on the basis of how long that person stayed in the hospital. That's the per-day system of reimbursement. Both the legislature and the executive branch are in agreement that that system should be changed to case payment. That means that the rate of reimbursement would be based on what kind of illness a person had, rather than simply how long they spent in the hospital. The problems came, as they often do, in the details of how to implement the bill. The governor argued in his veto message that hospitals should be grouped in regions and rates for specific illnesses set for the entire region. That way, the more expensive hospitals would receive the same amount of reimbursement as less expensive hospitals, which Cuomo has argued would provide long-term incentive to lower costs. But in the bill passed unanimously by the legislature, each hospital would be reimbursed on the basis of their specific rates, so that the most expensive hospitals would receive more money. In vetoing the bill, Cuomo said that the State Health Department and Commissioner Dr. David Axelrod project that the legislature's plan would cost an additional $400 million a year for insurance companies, and that those costs would have to be met by the businesses and New Yorkers who pay insurance. He said it would amount to an unfortunate tax increase in the year of major tax cuts. The Health Department numbers, however, are disputed by one of the leading legislators on the bill, Assembly Majority Leader James Talen. The Binghamton Democrat says that he thinks there are other reasons for the bill's veto.
We recognize that the hospital, Health Department would fight hard for a veto on the bill. In 1985, the Health Department advocated that hospital reimbursement legislation be vetoed, and we recognized that the department was likely to be an opponent. When in the last week of the legislative session, the Health Department produced this highly inflated cost analysis to support its own position from its own data, the legislature sought an outside analysis. Our original estimate had been that the added costs would be slightly more than 1% above the current reimbursement system projected forward. We went outside to an independent analyst, and we thought the best place to go was to the Blue Cross companies in New York State, who are major payers of health care and certainly have the technical expertise to do the analysis. Their estimate was that the actual increase was only about 0.13 of 1%. An actual estimate of about $19 million on the base of a $6 billion system. By getting that independent analysis, we felt that we were confirmed in our original estimate that the bill did not pose major new cost increases. In fact, the estimate was a little bit lower than we had made. And the Health Department analysis, which of course supports its own position, just stands out there quite apart from any analysis that anyone else has done of the legislation, that we simply reject it.
Well, why do you think the health department is so opposed to the legislative plan?
Well, I think that the health department essentially has pursued a strategy of trying to centralize under its own control the hospital reimbursement system, where it would not be guided by legislative enactments, but it would have centralized in the health department a great deal of broad and discretionary authority on elements of hospital reimbursement. This is consistent with the department's pattern in nursing home reimbursement, in home health care reimbursement, and in the capital financing of hospitals. In the last couple of years, the department has consistently sought to centralize under regulatory authority many aspects of control of the health care system in the state. And therefore, its position on this bill is consistent with where it's been in the past. It wants power centralized in the New York State Health Department.
Talen's contention that there is, in effect, a turf war going on over who will make health care policy, the legislature or the health department, comes, of course, at a time when the health department is trying to get public smoking banned in New York State through regulation. The department is arguing in court challenges to the rule that they have the authority to go over the legislature and promulgate such rules. Talen says that he and other legislative leaders from both parties and both houses will be deciding in the next 2 weeks what to do next. Assembly Speaker Mel Miller said last month that he would consider bringing the legislature back into session if the reimbursement bill was vetoed, and Assemblyman Talen says that one of the issues lawmakers will be discussing is whether to override the governor's veto. It would be the first legislative override for the Cuomo administration. I'm Leslie Brokaw reporting.
Starting this fall, it will be illegal for New York schools to sell certain sweet snacks for most of the day. Signed this week was a bill intended to boost students' consumption of nutritious foods. The new law will ban the sale of soda, chewing gum, and many candies and chocolates from the beginning of the school day to the last lunch period. The assembly sponsor of the bill, Democrat Helene Weinstein, told Leslie Brokaw that the bill was designed not to keep sweets from school kids entirely, but just for the part of the school day before they eat lunch.
Clearly, the schools don't spend the same kind of money advertising their nutritionally good food as do the candy manufacturers and the soda manufacturers, where they spend literally millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars a year on advertising. Not saying that people shouldn't be having these items, but not instead of lunch.
Were you lobbied heavily when you were promoting this bill?
I tell you something, quite frankly, I think that some of the candy manufacturers and the soda manufacturers will tell you themselves that that somehow this got by them initially, and it wasn't until it appeared on the floor, had already passed the Senate, it appeared on the Assembly floor, that all of a sudden the lobbyists for all of the any of the groups that might have potentially not have access to the children started to do some heavy lobbying, and in fact they did, though at that point it was already out of committee and already passed the Senate.
Exempt from the bill are potato chips and ice cream, a point argued by the Confectioners Association as unfair. Weinstein says the snacks heavy in refined sugar and caffeine were indeed targeted because they affect the attention spans and energy levels of students more adversely. The plan is the broadest statewide plan in the country, according to the groups that had tried to kill the measure. Not subject to the part-time ban are apple muffins as well. What started as a fourth-grade civics lesson on how a bill becomes law was this week's actually signed into law. The apple muffin now joins the rose, sugar maple tree, bluebird, garnet gem, and beaver as an official symbol of the state. The veto process is one of the more contentious but important processes of the executive office. The Legislative Gazette's Maury Small spoke with Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen about how the process works in Albany and who the players are.
It absolutely is the decision of the governor whether to sign or veto legislation, and he takes this period of time very seriously. Almost never will Governor Cuomo give advance notice of whether he's going to veto or sign legislation, and then he asks his consul, Evan Davis is the head consul, to get all the information, not just legal analysis, but all the facts that are relevant to particular legislation, and he makes a decision. As for myself, I will send him a memorandum about a few bills that I think he might be interested in, the perspective I've gained by traveling around the state or in which I have a particular interest. I'll also contribute to the process by being available and discussing a number of important bills that he has to act on as he's in the process of making that decision.
Do you ever have a situation where legislators interested in that piece of legislation do try to do some personal lobbying with either you or Cuomo or anyone?
Oh, absolutely. Legislators who are sponsors and interested in legislation will often call up Evan Davis, the governor's chief counsel, with information that they want him to take into consideration. Their lawyers might call with legal opinions. We've been engaged in that, as a matter of fact, this very morning and yesterday with respect to the final group of bills that the governor has to act on. And even individuals with interests in legislation will be calling, he and myself and Jerry Crotty, the secretary to the governor, up until the final moments of his decision.
What about after a veto? Do you ever hear reaction from legislators who didn't want it vetoed?
Oh, yes. Legislators who are disappointed in vetoes often will sort of bear a grudge or feel badly about the disposition of their laws. Usually, though, you try to use this period of time to try to work out problems. I have not been in the state government before, but I've been at least close enough to it to understand the process that in the aftermath of a veto of a bill that maybe we wanted out in southwestern New York very badly, the governor and his staff people make themselves available to a legislator and people who have a community of interest to try to work out the details of a compromise so that next year the legislative review and approval can be smoother.
Were you surprised that the governor signed the bill this week making apple muffins the official muffin?
No, I wasn't really surprised by it. It isn't obviously very important legislation, but it's very compelling when these young grade school students from Syracuse come down here. I was presiding over the Senate the day the Senate acted on it, and it gets to be a bit of a joke. I was kiddingly saying that I didn't look very favorably on the legislation because they hadn't delivered me an apple muffin as they did to the other senators in the chamber. But I think the governor looked at it more as a civics lesson, a very important one for some involved youngsters, than he did on the merits of the issue as to whether one muffin or another ought to be given recognition.
Okay. On a much more serious topic, the big news today is that U.S. Attorney Rudolph Giuliani is announcing corruption charges against 44 officials in New York State. Are you familiar with this story yet?
I have simply read the early reports of the announcement that a sting operation has netted 44 officials of municipalities in New York. I don't know anything more than the early press reports about this incident.
You find it alarming at all?
I find it absolutely shocking, but I would say and share with the listeners that, as most people who listen to public radio know, most public officials are honest and really want to do a public service, not just to serve their own ends. Now, unfortunately, there are those who are not, and I think it is very important to have vigorous law enforcement available, and the federal prosecutions are one manner of acting against government corruption. The governor and I believe very strongly that corrupt activities by public officials have to be stamped out. That's why we worked so hard this year to get an ethics bill and a strong bill setting up audits of state government.
Do you think New York is going to get an even worse reputation because of these charges?
Well, I don't think that the state deserves a worse reputation when we're moving aggressively to expose and correct corrupt conditions. I believe you deserve a reputation when there's a culture of corruption that's ignored. And in this state, not only in New York City, but throughout the state, we're paying it serious attention and taking corrective action.
Stan Lundeen, Lieutenant Governor of New York. He spoke with Maury Small.
New York lawmakers considered and then put off action on a surrogate parenting bill this year, a bill to regulate the practice of a woman bearing a child for another couple. One of the leading proponents of the bill is Senator John Dunn, the Deputy Majority Leader of the Senate and a Republican from Long Island. He spoke with Alan Chartok about where the proposed legislation now stands.
The bill which we thought addressed this problem, particularly one that's growing in New York, is now being re-examined by both houses of the legislature. We're addressing the very serious problems of, one, whether the mother should be compensated for her serving as a surrogate mother, and the other is whether that surrogate mother ought to have the right to change her mind after the birth. Both of these have been crucial issues which have been focused on by both houses. They were the stumbling points in trying to get a bill passed in 87, but we think we'll have one in shape for 88.
You have two major interest groups, the Catholic Church, NARO, the National Organization of Women. Both of them have problems with surrogate parenting. How does a state senator like yourself respond when those kinds of pressures are put on you?
You respond cautiously. I have great respect for the bishops who have characterized any surrogate parenting agreement as a moral disaster. The NOW organization feels that this has really debased women, the practice of hiring a woman's uterus for the purpose of carrying somebody else's child. You must work very sensitively and negotiate with them. I'm not sure that we're ever going to be able to satisfy them totally, but they have legitimate concerns, and I have warned my colleagues that if I'm going to ask them to support a bill, it is going to be one which we'll have to accommodate as far as we can both of those concerns.
Isn't this pure proof of that the major interest groups can really stymie the legislature from doing what has to be done?
Oh, indeed they can. And I think that this was a classic case of it falling to the legislature. Clearly, it shouldn't be left to the courts, shouldn't be left to health officials, but to the legislature to determine a public policy for the entire state with regard to a very sensitive issue. Our principal concern here, Alan, has been to craft a bill which will guarantee a protection of the best interests of the child. Not the selfish interests of the intended couple or the surrogate mother, but to create an aura which will protect the best interests of the child, which is the product of these surrogate agreements.
You've been watching the governor on this and negotiating with them. Is the governor doing what he has to do to make this thing get put into shape?
Yeah, I think the governor has been helpful. At the outset, he felt that it was too early to act on a bill in 87, that we had to examine it more closely. He has offered the services of his task force on life and the law, which is presently looking at this subject, and I'm encouraged that if they become involved and come up with a proposal which will be helpful to us, we will have the commitment of both the governor and the legislative leaders, and that's why I'm optimistic for a bill next year. The governor's involvement here is very helpful.
On just one other subject, Senator Richard Schermerhorn, an associate of yours from Newburgh, is now accused of having taken a $6,000 bribe. Senator Andrew Jenkins from Queens, a Democrat, is now been involved in a sting operation in which the FBI allegedly gave him some money to take out of the country illegally for laundering purposes. What do you make of this as the deputy leader in the state Senate?
Well, of course, I'm very troubled by it on two levels. One, I know both of these men. I've worked with them. I think they have been very effective in their representation of their constituents, as well as participating in a very positive fashion in the work of the Senate. And so, as a friend and colleague, I feel very badly about it. Second, it casts a severe shadow upon the Senate as an institution to which so many of us have devoted most of our adult lives. And I just hope that what are so far informal charges, there have been no indictments brought down against them, will be resolved as quickly as possible so that we can get on with the work of the Senate and they can get on with their personal lives.
You don't feel that it has essentially hampered the work of the Senate as a legitimate body, a representative body?
No, it has not. These are disclosures which arose after the close of the session. There was no hint of them prior thereto. And that's why I'm hopeful that there'll be a resolution before we resume our activities as a Senate.
John Dunn is sponsor of the surrogate parenting bill that was debated this year in the legislature. He's the second in charge in the New York State Senate, serving as deputy majority leader. This is the last week that Leslie Brokaw will be producing the Legislative Gazette and working at WAMC. To say that Leslie has done wonderful things would be an understatement. Week after week, it's been Leslie who has toiled over the show and made it what it was. We wish her well in her new job in Boston and hope that we can call on her for advice and counsel as we continue to bring you the Legislative Gazette. Leslie, we'll miss you. Help on our program comes from Maury Small, Dan Analek, and Brenda McMahon, and I'm Alan Chartok. Tune in next week for more news about your state government.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the State University College at New Paltz.
Statewide satellite distribution of this program was made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.